Now Smith able to recover. Well, there it is. And we are in the vicinity of the Magic Kingdom, and maybe something special is starting to happen for Oscar Pereira and company. Orlando City getting over the line. It wasn't perhaps as pretty as it might have been, Ali. But they did enough, and that is what counts when it comes to knockout football. Orlando City through.
That is right, folks. Orlando City moving on to the quarterfinals of the MLS's back tournament after a 1-0 victory over Impact du Montreal. Welcome in, everyone, to the Orlando Soccer Show. My name is Austin David. Bienvenue to Gavin Eubank.
Bienvenue, Austin. Yeah. Comment ça va?
Yeah. Bon. We're not talking French here because Orlando beat Montreal. So we're back to English now. And apparently, according to Michael Citra of the mainland, mayonnaise is now okay on hamburgers, which...
I didn't know there was a ban on that.
I didn't either. I was unaware, blissfully unaware, because I had mayonnaise on my hamburger the day of that game. Anywho, yeah. Orlando beating Montreal 1-0. It was a game. Mm-hmm. What is the best way to describe this game other than Orlando scored a goal and moved on?
Well, we can definitely say that arguably Orlando City played some of the best soccer we have ever seen from this club in the opening 20-25 minutes. A lot of beautiful passing, ball movement, one-touch passes, just completely dominated Montreal in their half of the field.
I will say that first game against NYC back in 2015, there was a lot of similarities where there was a lot of, you know, beautiful passing movement in the first 20 minutes of the game. If you remember, there was like that kind of shock value where it's like, oh, wow, this team could be really good. And then it all kind of fell apart because the team couldn't score.
Right. Yeah.
The only reason that Orlando won this game is because of a fluke defensive error by Montreal. Not to bring everyone down here, but this team can't score right now. Chris Mueller has scored. However, he has kind of gone quiet offensively. I feel like teams have finally cued into him a bit and have said, okay, well, let's probably just mark this guy out of the game, and then what's Orlando going to do? Tesho scored. Again, good play from Orlando to build up to it, but it was an easily avoidable goal that Montreal conceded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was two Montreal players kicking the ball to Tesho Akindele for a wide-open goal.
Right. I don't mean to be the negative person here. I'm just trying to be realistic in the fact that what is Orlando going to do against a team like LAFC, who they'll be playing this Friday at 7:30, who has somewhat better team, just in general?
They've scored 16, 17 goals in five games in this tournament? Four games in this tournament?
Yes. Now, I will say this. Orlando's defense is probably better than Seattle's was last night or the night before, mm-hmm. where they kind of shipped a couple goals just from defensive errors. Shane O'Neill is unfortunately not good, and it showed. He literally scored basically an own goal. I don't think it was actually counted as an own goal. But it just felt like an own goal because it literally just deflected straight off his head and in, as you do. When you look at the back line that they had last night, they had Shane O'Neill and Xavier Arriaga. And Arriaga, and I think that was the third goal that Diego Rossi scored. Rossi dribbled at Arriaga, and Arriaga tried to clear it, and it ended up going behind him into the final third. And then when you give a player like Rossi the ball in the final third, he's probably going to finish. It was a comedy of errors by Seattle's defense last night or the night before, and I don't see that happening for Orlando. I think they're much more defensively sound. I think they've proven that by the way they've played through this tournament. They have conceded all of three goals
total? One against Miami.
Yeah, one against Miami.
One against NYC and one against Philly, yeah.
Yeah, so three goals. Yeah. They've conceded one goal against each of their teams in the previous round, and then in the knockout round, they have conceded zero, of course, small sample size. But you're going against one of the best offenses currently playing in the MLS SPAC tournament outside of probably maybe Columbus. It is going to be a challenge because when you look at Orlando's roster, like I said, who's going to be your main source of offense? Who's going to put the ball in the back of the net? As sound as Orlando's defense is, LA's offense has been on such a high run lately that if they concede a goal, can Orlando battle back and pull it level with the way that the offense has been finishing the last couple games?
I mean, can they pull it back and level? I think, yeah, because we've seen them do it twice now already against both Philly and Inter Miami.
Yeah.
To kind of bounce off a couple of those points, we'll start with the defense. You know, one of the things we talked about, obviously the defense has been very sound. We haven't seen individual mistakes very rarely from Orlando City in this tournament. And even going back to Orlando last year, as sound as they were defensively, the thing that killed them was those little individual mistakes here and there. Somebody loses the ball, somebody loses a tackle or a defender, and the opponents were easily able to take advantage of that and score. But Orlando's done a really good job of limiting that in this tournament. And they're, like you said, everything's been very sound. Robin Yatsen has been very strong. Antonio Carlos, outside of the NYC game where he had that one blunder against Juan Agudelo, has looked good. You know, the fullbacks have been good. The defensive midfielders have been very good in closing down space and just keeping teams at bay. As far as the offense is concerned, you know, like you said, who is this team? I think I talked about it last week. Like, Orlando has to play team football, team soccer, to be able to be successful. There's just very little individual talent on this roster to make up for those deficiencies. And I think that has kind of, like, for as well as they've played with the ball and as well as Chris Mueller has been in moments, it has papered over the fact that this team still can't score in the final third. They still don't have someone that's just going to connect to any ball and finish it off with pure class. I mean, Dom is obviously out for the tournament, so you don't have that. Tesho is not a guy that is just going to take shots and paint them into the upper right corner or whatever. He's a guy that wins headers and hits tap-ins and gets you close range goals. So you don't have, like, you know, outside of Nani, you don't have a guy that's going to just create his own shots. So,
well, Mauricio Pereira is a creator by trade.
Mm-hmm.
He is more prone to create for other teammates, which
he's done well in this tournament.
He has done well in this tournament, and he has even scored his own goal mm-hmm. by creating for himself. He basically
should have had
a
second goal.
He should have had a second goal, but he should have
against Miami.
If it was counted, he should have had his own secondary assist from Nani yeah. because he was the one who passed it to Nani to then mm-hmm. finish it off in a nice little give and go. But again, that's just creating for himself and for his teammates. But he has the ability to create for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if
he's
you go
very
back
good
and watch,
at dribbling into space, especially dribbling up against defenders.
Right. Now, if Oscar Pereja goes to Mauricio and says, "Hey, I need you to take more shots," I could see Mauricio taking more shots
mm-hmm.
just because that is something that is needed in the moment.
Which can be hard to do against a player who's not selfish like that, you know? Who's right. not keen on just taking the ball himself.
Yeah, but the way LAFC has been lining up, they've basically been playing a 4-3-3. The back four is one thing with Segura and Jakovic, and then Blackman and Diego Palacios on the left. But people forget that Marc-Anthony Kay is one of the better midfielders in MLS right now, and I feel like he kind of goes under the radar even now. Like, he was an MLS All-Star last year, but I feel like he is probably one of the more underrated players for LAFC.
Yeah, and no, that's when not you even, play that's alongside not even Carlos Vela and Diego yeah. Rossi, yeah.
But that's not even mentioning guys like Atuesta mm-hmm. or Latif Blessing, Diego Rossi. Bradley Wright Phillips is, like, started coming up, too. And that's not even mentioning LAFC's bench, because they have Andy Nahar on the bench that he hasn't even played. Mohamed El Manir, former Orlando City player. I don't know what happened with Diamande,
yeah.
He wasn't on the bench the other night against Seattle, so I don't know what's happening with him. By the way, fun story, Mohamed El Manir listed as a forward now for LAFC.
Didn't he score against the Galaxy?
He did.
Yeah.
But I just find it funny that he is gone from being a left back to now listed as a forward, because I remember in Orlando he was very adamant that he was a left back. He even told us at media availability one day, like, I don't mind playing forward, but I am a left back. I'm a defender. That's what he told us that one time. I'll never forget that, because Bob Bradley obviously doesn't feel the same way.
Yeah, right.
But this team that LAFC has had, even without Carlos Vela, has proven that they can score. Bradley Wright Phillips, who hadn't been scoring in New York, had been coming off the bench, is now starting and scoring for LAFC. He has, what, 3 goals in the tournament thus far?
Yeah.
Is that right?
God, it's so unfair how they just managed to pick him up to add to their embarrassment of riches up there.
Right.
And it makes you wonder, like, why a team like Orlando City, who has been in obviously desperate need of forward scorers since Kyle Larin left, did not make a hard attempt for him.
Yeah. I think because the fact that he's 34 and coming off an injury, that probably dissuaded a team like Orlando to go after him. But it assuaded a team like LAFC. Because of their embarrassment of riches, they can take the chance on a guy like BWP and say, hey, if he works out, that's great for us. If he doesn't, we don't lose anything from it because we have all these other players that can fill his spot.
Yeah, it's a very similar approach to like how the Yankees have been treating like the last decade. What they'll do is they'll get these guys who used to be like stars within the league, and they're still admirable names, but they'll buy them, or they'll trade for them, or they'll sign them on like really cheap contracts. Just, and it's like, all right, this guy hasn't been good in 4 years, but we're paying him $2 million, and if he hits 10 home runs for us, then that's amazing. And it usually works out in the end.
I mean, just look at what the Patriots did.
Yeah, the
with
Patriots
their quarterback
too.
Situation. Yeah. I mean, they just went and got Cam Newton, who was a former NFL MVP, for the minimum that they could possibly pay him. Yeah, and again, like, BWP is not making much. I think the report was like he was getting a minimum contract too. I don't think he was even getting anything like TAM related.
Yeah,
which just blows my mind because BWP just 3 years ago was one of the best strikers in MLS, and yeah, he's 34 and coming off an injury, but. Until you prove otherwise, he's still one of the best strikers in MLS. And he's got 3 goals in 3 games in the MLS's back tournament, not including Monday night's game against Seattle, because those don't count for the regular season tournament games. But regardless of that fact, BWP scoring goals, at the very least, he is setting up opportunities to score goals. He had an assist on Monday night on Latif Blessing's goal, which I believe is the one that was headed in by Shane O'Neill. But this team, that in LAFC is good offensively. Orlando has been good defensively. I think it'll be a good matchup to the point where Orlando is asked to score goals. That is really the only question mark that I have right now with this Orlando team. Because the build-up is good. They've shown against better competition. I'd say this is going to be their biggest test for sure. But you've seen NYC and Philadelphia have to adapt to the way Orlando plays.
Yeah.
Normally, when Orlando plays a game, it is the other way around, where Orlando has to adapt to their opponents. But it shows something that what Oscar Pereja is doing, that it's forcing teams to be able to adapt to him rather than the other way around, and them being the dominator of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, they come out in a very aggressive approach, and we definitely saw that against NYC or against Montreal. The way that they just get possession and they just start relentlessly pushing it forward at your goal in slow buildups. It's not like they're playing direct soccer either. Like, they're just slowly picking apart defenses, playing beautifully around the field. They're just playing their style, and like you said, they are making teams have to play to them. It's going to be interesting to see if they take that approach against LAFC, because their aggressive style by nature can leave them exposed when they're pushing those fullbacks up the field. And it's kind of like that thing where you don't want to be in a position where LAFC can hit you on a counterattack like that with all that they're going to throw at you. but I don't think we're going to see Orlando be pragmatic at all either. Because like they can, when they get leads late into games, they drop into like that five back setup, and they get into a defensive shape that Perea's teams tend to do from time and time again. But I definitely expect Orlando, they're going to play this. They obviously have nothing to lose. You know, losing this game means nothing in the long term. Mm-hmm. Winning it means a lot more. So they don't have anything to lose. I don't see why we're not going to see anything but an aggressive Orlando City.
I would agree with that. And I think I was just thinking about this, thinking of the Montreal game. It finished 1-0. Mm-hmm. I remember when Oscar Pereja was first hired, in his introductory press conference, he said, "I hope we're going to see a lot of 1-0 victories." That was one of the things he said in his introductory press conference. A lot of 1-0 victories. And I can't help but go back and think about that and look at that Montreal game. It's like, yeah, that's just the typical 1-0 victory. You grab the goal, you play well, and you look good doing it. It doesn't matter how many goals you score. It just matters if you win. I spent the whole last couple minutes saying who's going to score. I think the answer comes with the game plan. The way the game was going, Orlando was dangerous all night, and they had a goal that should have been scored, called back. But again, the game plan changes regardless, like the how the game goes. So the way Montreal changed their game plan in the second half was they basically went to a five in the back. And they threw three center backs to try and muck up the offense. And Orlando scored. If they don't score that goal, I still say that they're dangerous and they still find a goal at some point throughout the night. But they weren't necessarily looking for a second. They were looking to hold that 1-0. And I think that's the kind of differentiator between winning in a convincing fashion or just winning in general.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing that's impressive to me about Perea is, you know, like if you think back to when Jason Christ was here, and like all we talked about was Jason wants to play the diamond. He's going to like, he's got to get his players in. He wants to play his formation. He's just some yada yada. But like Perea coming in, he's not, I need to do this. He's a guy that looks around with what he has and it works with that. I mean, like we said, this is the same Orlando City team for the most part that James O'Connor had last year. And Oscar Pereja is using that same team, but in a different way. And he's getting good results out of him. He's getting the players to play better. He's making them feel more confident. And it leaves you understanding that there is obviously still work to be done. But the fact that he can take this roster as is and get them to play well above expectations is certainly promising enough for people to be able to watch these games.
And
obviously,
again,
given that the holes that they still have.
Right. But I mean, the way that Oscar Pereja has been praised over the last week of his turnaround of Orlando City is definitely warranted. But it's a few games in. Do you remember Jason Christ was praised for turning around Orlando City in that 6-game winning streak? And then all of a sudden they lose almost every game after that. Look, I'm impressed with what Oscar Pereja has done. But I have learned my lesson from Orlando City teams of the past. And I will say, wait till the rest of the season plays out, if there is a rest of the season. Mm-hmm. And then we can talk about how Oscar Pereja is the savior of Orlando City.
Yeah, I mean, I like I've said on this podcast, I've said it in my writings, like I'm not ready to dispel the past based on what we've seen, and not just what is a very small sample size, but this is a one-off tournament, the likes of which will never likely be recreated again, where many teams are at hard disadvantages of scheduling, of fitness, and everything else in between. I mean, this is not a typical scenario that you can look at, honestly, any of these teams and say, because, I mean, look at the teams that went out in the first round, LA, Red Bulls, Atlanta, like all these teams that came in, Seattle struggled early. I mean, like all these good teams came in and struggled, and then the Vancouvers and the Montreals and the Cincinnati's are all the ones advancing, and that's not an indicator that any of those teams are good. But given that Orlando has played good soccer now in 4 games, it's enough to make me say the team is playing well and there are encouraging signs, but I'm not ready, obviously, to say, yeah, this team is going to be competing for an MLS Cup when play resumes.
And yet you wrote an article comparing Orlando City's team to 1970 Brazil.
I checked myself on that one.
Mm-hmm. I just want to point that out to you, that the fact that you just said, I'm not ready yet, you wrote that article.
Are you telling me that my comparisons of Pele to Mauricio Pereira and Alberto Carlos to Juan and Zagallo to Oscar Pereira were just a bit outlandish?
I would say you're, yeah, just a little bit. So we've talked about this game against Montreal. We've looked ahead to this game against LAFC. I think we should talk about the rookies from this past game. Daryl Dike and Joey Desart getting their debuts for the club in kind of interesting circumstances. They were good for the time that they played. Dike definitely more eyes on him because he was playing up front. Desart was playing in the midfield and just held things down. But Dike was a bull in a china shop in more ways than one. Picked up a couple fouls and a yellow card in the process of him literally just running through defenders. And definitely an impressive performance from him. And Desart, he did what he needed to do. And I asked Oscar Pereja, you know, just in general, what his thoughts were on Dike and Desart, because it's not often that you get debuts for players in the setting that was this past Saturday night. And yet, they were in a game in the round of 16, clinching to a 1-0 lead. And Pereja said it's going to make them grow a lot. The circumstances of the tournament, not just debuting in any game, they're debuting in a game that needed personality. And that personality presence in the game to seal it, to get into spaces and obviously to get the win. It's a responsibility that they had absorbed well, and we are very proud. And one of the things that Pereja said going into this tournament and going into this game was that they were going to give these young guys the opportunity to earn playing time. He said it's not given to them, they're earning it. So it goes to show that these two young players, in Oscar Pereja's mind, earned playing time over some of the more veteran players.
Yeah, I mean, Pereja, you know, obviously a guy known for giving these players opportunities. I mean, we've seen it over the years at FC Dallas and the guys that have gone on to be great players and moved on, sold for big money. Obviously not getting ahead of ourselves and saying that that's going to be the case here with these guys, but that he is going to them in close games, a 1-0 game in the knockout stage of a tournament that the club wants to win, you know, in the later stages, MLS debuts, well, not technically, but club debuts, speaks a lot. And like you said, they both did what they had to do. They played well. They showed some promise. And I'm looking forward, especially from DK, I'm looking forward to seeing a lot more of him, hopefully, in the future as Orlando City tries to figure out who's going to score some goals for them over the next few years.
And I want to say that, like, when I was at the game, the hype from the bench when those guys were able to come in, and just the way that, like, specifically Alex DeJean, he was incredibly vocal on the sideline throughout the game. But when DK and Desart came in, you know, that he was clapping everything that they did. You know, that one run that DK was coming down through defenders, he just like, take him, Daryl, take him, come on, Daryl. The way that the bench was reacting to the players coming in and getting their debuts and like almost scoring, you know, like Kamal Miller was like, you know, smiling behind his hand after DK took the shot and like was just running through defenders. And it was a fun sight to see. And for the confidence of those guys, not only having the bench behind them, but having their coach behind them to be able to put them in pressure situations like that, for young players striving for playing time, to have their coach believe in them does wonders for their confidence. Sometimes it takes that, just having someone believe in you to be able to play to your potential. Case in point, mm-hmm. Dom Dwyer. He wasn't getting playing time with Sporting Kansas City, was loaned to Orlando. Adrian Heath believed in him and put him in a position to score goals. He scored goals and then went back to MLS and continued to do so. So it just goes to show you how much a coach's confidence in a player can do just for their general play style and confidence in playing.
So even thinking about a guy like Kevin Molino, mm-hmm. having Adrian Heath in his corner all these years.
Yeah.
When he came back from his injury and he didn't look that great, but then he eventually started to pick up his confidence and he finally got that penalty against Portland that one game.
Mm-hmm.
And it all started to come together for him.
Yeah. And throughout the entire time, and even now with Minnesota, Adrian Heath continues to sing the praises of Kevin Molino, saying, well, we need Kevin. He's such an integral part into our offense. Just to buoy up a player like that who thrives on that confidence. And Dom was exactly like that. He thrived on people being in his corner. And like he fed off of that. Like that's how he was able to play so well. He also thrives off the haters, but I feel like not as much as he does with the people in his corner.
Yeah. That's true.
But again, it's look, if you have a friend saying I believe in you, it's better than saying I don't believe in you, and like it's just that simple. Just saying I believe in you gives you a bit of confidence. It gives you motivation to be able to play better. It's just mental games that you have to play.
It's not just managing tactics. You have to manage personalities and egos and
exactly
a whole host of more.
Right. Okay. So what else do you see as a challenge for this LAFC game on Friday? Knowing that Oscar Bray has 3 days to prepare, knowing that he probably knew that LAFC was going to be the team that he was going to play against.
Mm-hmm. Well, it should be noted that Orlando does have an advantage in terms of rest because they obviously have 2 extra days. So that itself gives them a big leg up on LAFC going into this match. In a game that ended at, what, 1 in the morning?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's tough to say just how much of a role that will play, but that certainly has to be factored in to giving Orlando to closing the gap between where these teams are going to be.
Before we end this very short show, because I feel like we talked about all we need to talk about, to be completely honest, I want to take a look at the MLS's back tournament and the rest of it, and I want your thoughts on... Now that we have a quarterfinals matchup, who you think will make it to the semis and eventually make it to the championship? So in the quadrants, we have Philadelphia and Sporting Kansas City, and then we have Orlando and LAFC. Then we have NYCFC and Portland.
Yeah, I say NYC definitely has the advantage in this one. They looked really good against Toronto. Toronto obviously had their own inefficiencies, given that they were missing Akinola. Michael Bradley didn't look great. I think is Josie's hurt for them.
Josie's so. Back. He played the last couple minutes.
Okay, so yeah, I mean NYC struggled early on, but they've definitely created a lot of chances for themselves throughout this tournament, and now we're finally starting to see them fall.
Mm-hmm.
I give them the edge.
Now the Philadelphia Kansas City game.
I like Philly. They obviously haven't really blown anyone away in this tournament, but they still play good, sound soccer.
Yep. Kansas City, you didn't watch that Vancouver game, but Kansas City had like 30-something shots.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a wild one.
Right. Now, Vancouver obviously is not a great team right now because they're missing like a lot of players. They're missing almost an entire starting lineup worth of players. So it's not a great barometer to what Kansas City can or can't do, because Vancouver was basically playing for a draw the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
But the way Philadelphia has played, they're considered one of the favorites still within the tournament to win. Yeah, I mean, I like Philadelphia, and Andre Blake has been good this tournament. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's shown that Sporting Kansas City, when they come up against good goalkeepers, seem to not be able to score. So yeah. I'll give the edge to Philadelphia on this one. And then the Orlando LAFC game we've already talked about. Now, San Jose.
Well, who do you think wins?
Oh, in the Orlando LAFC game?
Yes.
I'll let you go first.
Listen, I want to be optimistic. I really do. It's hard to also be a realist and think that Orlando City wins this game. And that's... not to discredit anything they've done so far, but I think the their problems in the final third as far as finishing is hard to overcome against a team that is not at that problem in this tournament.
Hmm.
Which, like we've mentioned, even without their best player, I mean, like, this team scored, what, 80-something goals last year? They just can't be stopped. I mean, I will give it this, and I mentioned this before the show, like, Orlando against big teams, they don't just get run over. They don't sit back. I mean, those were teams, very pragmatic teams under James O'Connor last year that competed with Atlanta. Could have easily have come out of there with a draw. They competed with Seattle. They competed with LAFC, who they drew 2-2 at home without Carlos Vela last year. I mean, like, they can play against the big guys. Now this team has confidence. This team is playing good soccer. It's going to be a good game. I'm not expecting Orlando City to lose by more than a goal.
All right. I'm going to let Dom Dwyer say what I want to say. You ready for this?
Okay.
And we said optimistic with the season. We're very optimistic. We were very optimistic. Very optimistic. We're very optimistic, and we're working very hard.
That's fair.
Yep. You should hear the remix of that. You want to hear the remix of that?
Yeah, why not?
All right, here we go. I made this back in 2018 when he just kept saying optimistic.
And we're still optimistic, and we're very optimistic. We were very optimistic. Very optimistic. We're very optimistic, and we're working very hard.
Anywho, that's that. They're very optimistic. I am very optimistic for Orlando to make a game out of this, and that is the way I'll put it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Now, on the other side, San Jose will be playing Minnesota. It's tough. I really like San Jose.
I like San Jose. They, you know, it's hard to not root for that team, considering they don't have a whole mess of talent on their roster compared to Minnesota. I got to go with them. You got to go with Matias Almeida. I mean, he's just a coach that you like to root for. He brings some fun and energy. Besides, I would be remiss if I backed up Brent's rival on this show. So,
yes. And I really would have wanted to see the Minnesota-Orlando matchup.
Yeah. I think if we get that matchup, then it'll all be worth it. So, because we were deprived of that last year in the Open Cup. We almost got it, but not quite.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, well.
I mean, Adrian Heath is probably getting so upset right now that we're not believing in his team. But, you know.
Listen. The fun thing with I guess Caleb Porter and Adrian Heath are going like back to back, going back and forth. They were going back and forth before their game, and I guess it got a bit heated where they were like Caleb Porter was calling Adrian Heath out, something about his mind games. He said so Adrian Heath said we probably won't turn up because everyone's crowned the crew champions already, so we'll give it to them.
Adrian Heath and his crusade against the media is
hilarious.
So
it's
entertaining.
It's specifically MLS.
MLS.com.
And then Caleb Porter, right. And then Caleb Porter came back and said he likes to sandbag his team a little bit and take the attention off them and put it on the other team. The problem with that is everyone knows they have a good team. So if you look at their record, they're now unbeaten on the year.
Yeah, they are unbeaten in like six games this year. So yeah.
Caleb Porter said that Adrian Heath's team would be the best they played so far.
Yeah. I think,
I mean, that's a compliment.
If Minnesota gets past San Jose, I think regardless of what they do, like, people need to actually start taking Minnesota and Adrian Heath seriously.
I feel like they should have already been doing that.
I mean, they should have, yeah, considering they finished, what, third last year in the Western Conference? Mm-hmm. When definitely no one expected that. You know, big shocker. I know, I'm sure we've already said this a million times, but the 3-year plan and all.
Yes, 3-year plan.
Fun. It's fun to watch these guys.
Well, I think we should end it here, call it a quick episode, mm-hmm. and reconvene next week, hopefully talking about an Orlando City win, moving on to the semifinals, which, if they do win, will be taking place on August 6th at 8 o'clock p.m. Just for those wondering, August 6th is a Thursday, which is a weird day of all things. And then the final will be on Tuesday, August 11th.
Another weird day.
Yes.
All right. Well, this has been fun. I'll see you guys next week.
This has been fun. Indeed. All right. Thanks for tuning into the Orlando Soccer Show. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, I will be at the game. So you can follow me at AustinDavid22 for live coverage from the game. You can follow at Gavin Eubank for coverage from his couch in Jacksonville. And, of course, you can follow at ByMikeGramajo for coverage of everything else in between. I think that's the whole editorial staff for us as well. So that's it. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.